Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us. And once again, I want to remind you that just because you hear us discuss tax strategy, possible investment strategy, real estate options, etc., that you should check with your existing advisors. Make sure you heard what you thought you heard and that it applies to your facts and circumstances. And I suggest it's, there's still this investment area with real estate, multifamily. It's still got some stragglers in terms of the current debt structures that are working themselves through the system. There's still some bad deals if you're not careful. For those that were new to investing in multifamily, this last cycle, I guess I would call it, you may not have understood what you were looking at, and maybe you didn't hear our show when we were discussing the 3-year bridge loan as being problematic, potentially, and in fact it has been problematic, and we're not all the way through the purging, if you will, of the deals that had problems. And there's new attempts at some syndicators still doing cash calls. I've reviewed some of those as of late, and cash calls are definitely a mixed bag. I think they're even harder to analyze than, in some ways they're harder, in other ways they're easier because you know there's problems. But they're harder in the context of trying to relearn what a deal might turn into. In other words, what's the upside to us putting the IV, if you will, if you put it in medical terms, into this deal's arm? You know, is it going to bring it back to life where the go forward is worth putting more money into now, when all the while there's a risk that you're putting good money after bad? And I think to the extent you're presented an offer to do a cash call that has certain attributes, then you may want to move forward with that cash call. And we'll talk more about that once we get into the show. But in any event, this area of real estate private partnership syndications is still one of the better asset spaces, as we see it, to invest your money if you're behind in generating retirement income. And as you know, there's more than one way to, I better be careful, there might be some PETA members listening, but there's more than one way to skin the proverbial cat. It's a fake cat, it's not a real cat. No cats are getting skinned in reality. But there's more than one ways to attack being behind on your retirement funds. And I don't mean the lottery versus a rich uncle passing away and leaving you a bunch of money. I suppose those are both in the overall realm of possibilities, not likelihoods, perhaps. But bottom line is, the real estate private syndication market with apartment buildings, multifamily, even with the current headwinds that have been challenging, if they're underwritten, and now it's a little bit easier to underwrite them in the context of higher interest rates, et cetera, which even now the interest rates historically are about where they've been for the majority of the last 70 plus years, I think is what most articles allude to, maybe even longer, in that mortgage rates are in that 6 to 7, 7.5% range. And historically, that's what they've been. I can remember back in the early 80s when I was coming out of University of Houston, and I went to work in Houston for the large Arthur Andersen tax department there. I want to clarify that. Didn't do audits. Had nothing to do with audits. Don't want to do audits. And audits weren't responsible for the calamity that later befell Arthur Andersen, which many of you won't know this, but the Enron case that took them down, theoretically, the charges against Arthur were overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court 9-0. And so a lot of people never heard the rest of the story. And, of course, it didn't matter because at that point they were out of business. But, you know, the SEC and all the enforcement apparatus back then learned a lesson on putting major players in the accounting space out of business, and they haven't done it again since. They've had cases that were more egregious than what Arthur was accused of doing, but they realized that, hey, we can't take another hit on audit capacity by putting a big firm under, and so they've resisted it to a point. And in fact, I can remember during the trial, if I recall, of Arthur Andersen, KPMG got hit with what at the time, there's probably been larger penalties now, but at the time, it was the largest penalty ever issued by the SEC, if I recall correctly. So timing can be everything in a lot of situations. Real estate, certainly one of the biggest areas I could point to that would back that up. And, you know, timing is everything. And, you know, timing and location are everything, would be what I would suggest. And I've seen it with clients. I've got clients that have recently sold residences, even that maybe they purchased and moved into in the 70s in the Houston market, that have made a significant chunk of money because just getting in the way in many areas, and I'm not even referring to the California market, that's even more the case. They're just getting onto the playing field is the challenge. It's not whether or not they go up in value. And yes, in the Houston market, they'll go up and they'll come down more so than perhaps California, but still, getting in the game is, you know, a way to take advantage of real estate, even though right now and probably for the foreseeable future, according to the Florida Atlantic University rent-to-buy ratio, the index that they created, there's not many spots in America where it's going to make sense to buy versus rent for more than a few years. So, you know, again, think of it as an enforced or forced savings account, maybe, if you decide to buy. Or really, the truth is, buying in most cases is a lifestyle choice. It's not necessarily an investment choice. You know, if you want to change the carpet in your rental or paint the walls or whatever, you may find that you don't have that luxury with your landlord. So, and you may desire a yard with green grass for your kids and pets to run around in. Well, that's more of a home purchase, or I guess rental. You can rent now. The build to rent market is becoming a thing in you know, real estate development these days. And so, you know, there's multiple ways of attacking it. But I would tell you there's a certain freedom. Having been an owner and been a tenant, both sides of the spectrum, and currently both different parts of the world, I would suggest to you that there's a lot of merit to being, a lot of freedom to being a tenant where you're not tied down. And I make a living with those kind of customers in our corporate housing business in San Antonio. And, you know, we have the ability for someone to, quote, move in today. Already got the utilities on, the cable connection, the water, you know, everything's provided, and they're simply moving in like a motel or hotel, only they're typically staying for 30 days to 6 months. Or in one case, we had a 14-year guest. We love those, by the way. And those happen. And so in any event, we understand both sides of that rent versus buy, and we talk about it on the air, and some point we'll circle back to the current. I need to review that latest index to see if they're still saying rent, don't buy. If you're simply focused on the financial aspects. So anyway, for those of you that don't have financial, I'm going to get through this opening one way or the other. For those of you that don't currently have financial advisors that opine on real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, and or using your retirement funds for investing in real estate transactions, we can help to consider working with you. I would request that you go to our website at baplanner.com or baplannershow.com. Either one of those will get you to the right spot where you've got a forms link up at the top right of the home page. And if you go to the forms page, you'll see the first form is step one, client profile. If you will complete at least that form, if you're interested in us explaining how you might use your retirement funds, if you could fill out step two, the retirement profile, that would give us the information we need to know what type of funds you have, whether or not they're accessible, and how you might be able to control your retirement money to invest in private partnership syndication. Invest it in real estate passively, which means you don't have to get out of bed in the morning and you don't have to field the calls that come in on that property, whether it's prospective tenant or a clogged toilet or whatever you might have. You'll have typically younger people. If you're my age, you'll have younger people taking care of the property, handling the initial due diligence. They handle getting the debt placed. They find, in other words, they find a lender or lenders that will underwrite and fund that acquisition. And that same lead partner or sponsor or syndicator, that term all refers to the same role typically, will also undertake the capital raise. In other words, people like yourself, other people like yourself that are investing capital in the transaction passively. You're not going to have to do all the above. You're not going to have to engage maintenance staff, leasing staff. You're not going to have to raise the money as they're doing. You're going to be an investor. And the older one gets, the more that they typically appreciate that role. You may want to travel, or you may want to volunteer on a near full-time basis. But the point is, you've got other things you still want to achieve or experience with your life. And, you know, aside from the stock market, this is one of the other activities that you could choose to invest your hard-earned money in. And generally speaking, the multifamily space has returned above average returns over the past, you know, at least the 20 years that I've been consulting in this space, and you could go back further. Are there ups and downs? Yes, there are. Do people lose money from time to time? Yes, they do. And if you have a new syndicator or sponsor trying to act like, oh, well, that doesn't happen with our transactions, turn and walk the other way, because I can tell you they do. And there's things that you want to look for with any syndicator that you do business with that at least show you that they've done their homework, that they've got some stability, and yet even that is no guarantee that the deep enough pockets are lined up to withstand bad times. And, you know, we understand hardship. We think some hardship is good. It makes a syndicator stronger, and it gives a prospective investor a way to more fully understand how that syndicator reacts when the going gets tough. And if you're dealing with someone that's never experienced hardship, I don't care if it's in normal life or if it's in your investment life, I would say you may want to think twice about that relationship, because you don't really have anything to go on to show how they handled adversity previously. And you want to see that. You want to know that if they've had failure, they made a valid attempt to avert the crisis, and in any event, that they learned from it. And if we can learn from those hardships, then it's not a total negative event. But anyway, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. We're right at our halfway mark. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we were talking just briefly about the real estate private partnership market and what's taking place, and we're seeing a lot of new activity or some new activity. I don't know whether I should characterize it as a lot. You know, the deals that we're seeing, some of them are retreads, which could be a great opportunity if you're able to be involved in a partnership that's still has some life left in it, and it's not, you know, treading water too badly. It's not under occupied or heavy deferred maintenance that may have crept up, you know, in the recent past. And, you know, the multifamily assets have some unique characteristics that allow, you know, it's interesting. I've always, since I first became familiar with how the multifamily market makes money, you know, how do we make money in multifamily? And if you don't understand that, well, I tell you what, we'll explain it in a nutshell, and then you will understand why there's a lot of recycling, is what I'm going to call it, that goes on in the multifamily market. And it's all legit. You know, it's the way the business operates. The lenders are, quote, in on it. The investors are in on it. I don't know, but what, even the tenants, some of the tenants are in on it. But bottom line is, it's amazing how you can look at a 60-year-old apartment building, you know, certainly a Class C by that time in most cases, and a skilled or a shrewd syndicator can pick up a Class C property, and it doesn't have to be 60 years old. I think anything, shoot, probably anything older than 25 or 30 years is likely going to be a C, unless it's been significantly renovated, you know, and it's in the earlier, you know, in the last 10 years in the case of a 30-year-old property. But the typical Class C apartment building is going to have rents that are, of course, lower, significantly lower than an A and somewhat lower than a B. And of course, there's, you know, the plus minuses have to be worked into that equation. I'm going to give you the high level view, and I'm going to tell you essentially what you will learn if you go to any of the investor mentor platform group programs and join up and pay your 20 grand to be a member for some education and other services. It's not just education, but I'm going to tell you that educationally, and I'm going to say this in a nutshell, we're all fighting over how to maximize roughly $30,000 to $40,000, and maybe less now because the interest rates ticked up, of what comes out of each $100,000 of rental. Okay, so by the time you pay the operating expenses, everything but the mortgage, pretty much, not exactly, but pretty much, taxes would not be included in there. But suffice it to say, the NOI, that's a reference you'll see a lot, net operating income. and you're looking at what's essentially in a regular for-profit business we call EBITDA, you know, interest or earnings before depreciation, interest, taxes, and amortization, I believe, is EBITDA. Not looking at a definition right now. But in any event, that's essentially what we're fighting over, is who, where can we get us a lead partner that has some edge or understood when he was looking or she were looking at a prospect that she knew a way she could squeeze a little bit more out of the bottom on that asset. And that's the magic sauce that we seek to attain, because I don't want to say a monkey can get 80% of this right. They obviously can't, but you understand what I'm saying. A typical syndicator, less than stellar performance, can get a lot of the cash flow that would come out of a black box, if we call it that, on an apartment, where, you know, we buy a property, renovate it, lease it up, and then sit back, or not sit back, but certainly allow rents to come in, pay expenses, and again, just by being in the way, if you're in the right location, the property is going to go up some, but it might not be fully exploited, as opposed to if you have a syndicator that knows how to add the extra values. Again, smart home packages, maybe a trash valet, covered parking, things that money can be added to the monthly rent for, that creates a cash flow. By the way, I did just check, because I don't know, sometimes I forget some of the components, on the definition of NOI. And according to the AI overview, don't you love that section on the new or latest Google results? It represents a property's profitability by calculating the income generated after deducting all operating expenses, but before accounting for debt service, mortgage payments, and income taxes. NOI is a crucial metric for evaluating the financial performance of income-generating properties like apartment buildings or commercial spaces. So that's pretty much what I said earlier, and I'll enhance the deduction section, which I didn't give you many of those, but it's the operating expenses are things associated with running the property. Property taxes, insurance, maintenance, repairs, property management fees, and utilities. And further, it assumes a cash purchase, so no interest expense goes in to that number. So assuming somebody walked up and paid cash for the property, and we're not counting income taxes now, the NOI would be what effectively is left after gross income, operating income less operating expenses. And it's the factor that we use when you take the NOI and then you factor in the cap rate or capitalization rate, which the cap rate is the rate of net income that an investor or a lender would require. Lower the cap rate, the higher the value of the property. As the cap rate goes up, the property becomes worth less. And that's part of the fight that we have now, the challenge, if you will, is that at interest rates were rising, so was the cap rate that an investor would require to buy a property. And so it was a double whammy for those that had properties that were already treading water to now have a property that was less valuable. And that's why you see properties going back to lenders, because there's no way for the current owners to fight above the watermark and be able to pay the loan off or adjust their price far enough to allow a buyer, because the buyer's got to go out and find debt on the same property. And if what the buyer has to offer is simply the current performance of the building, then they're stuck as well. So buyers and owners have to have significant capital reserves in these times to take on interest rate increases. And, you know, that's why you've had a lot of foreclosures. That's why we're going to see even more. And that's the opportunity for well-funded partnerships that understand the other challenges we currently have, i.e. insurance over the last few years has tripled, if not quadrupled, in the multifamily market. Still likely to rise further with the recent calamities we've had around the country. And then in addition to insurance, you've got property taxes, which have gone up dramatically in some cases. You know, some owners are better at appealing those valuations than others. We've been fortunate. We tend to do pretty well in San Antonio market. In the apartment space, we've got an 8-unit building that we just were able to get a almost $100,000 reduction in the million-plus assessment. You know, that's, well, I don't know. To me, it's real money. It's about about $2,200 in taxes that would be saved. And some of the bigger properties, like in the Dallas market, Houston markets, they're doing multipliers or multiples of what we experienced with our little 8-unit. So, you know, the appraisal districts are increasingly aggressive. They already were, but they become worse, and you've got to make those property appeals. And I know we appeal every year. It's just a matter of our norm to do so. But in any event, the ability for us, I'm getting back on track here, as to how we make money with multifamily versus single family. So we buy the beat up old Class C's, and we execute what we refer to as a value add strategy, where we update that property, new amenities. I mentioned a few of the earlier ones. You know, I forgot flooring. You know, the wood flooring, the vinyl plank is a big one these days. And then I mentioned bark parks, you know, dog parks, and covered parking or garages, and entertainment rooms. Trying to think. I don't live in an apartment at the moment, so I can't really tell you what the new stuff is. And I don't have an 8-unit building like we have, does not have those amenities. We do provide a membership to a local fitness facility that's 3 blocks away. It's a very nice option. But in any event, all those amenities can get that old property in conjunction with exterior improvements, along with interior, can get you to a more competitive product with the rest of the market. And the Class C, a well-run Class C that's been updated, will be significantly lesser expensive for the tenant, typically, than a Class A. And, you know, that doesn't mean that the Class C doesn't get some Type A tenants. They do. Yeah, we're located in a great spot in San Antonio. We're, you know, 6 blocks out of downtown. We're several blocks off the Riverwalk. We're in the cool, quote-unquote, Southtown area. If you live in Houston, it would be like River Oaks, Montrose. If you lived in Dallas, it would be Turtle Creek type area. And I've forgotten the other areas there. SMU probably would be an equally comparable area. We're the historical area. The first historic district named by the state of Texas is the King William district, where one of our two properties is located, and the second one's in Lavaca Historic District, which is probably the second or third historic district name of the state. But bottom line is, people will pay us more to live in that location, even though we do not have A grade or A plus grade apartment buildings. We've got those around us, all around us, in fact. But, you know, there's something about having a niche that you play well in, and you offer enough amenity to justify the value represented by your asking price, and that attracts the right type of person. And, you know, when I say the right type of person, I'm referring to that has a job that can pay, or other sources of income where they can pay. They might not be able to afford the A apartment building down the street, but they can afford us, even though we're maybe within 5 to 10% of that A property. And again, location means a lot. And if you don't think it does, come look at our properties and you'll see the reason people want to be at our property. It's a lot has to do with location. But in any event, so when you have a property that you've improved and now you've been able to increase the rents on that property, and the top line on your P&L, rental income, has gone up, and of course it's projected to go up further over the next 5 years or so, inflation, etc. What a great asset to own if you're subject to a period of inflation is a multifamily property, because the rents are going to go up, maybe not in lockstep, but certainly within a reasonable period. And so the rents have gone up, your expenses have probably gone up some, but maybe not as much as your rental rates. And so therefore your net operating income has increased from the point that you bought the property. And when you refinance or sell, the comp is not really an issue. There may not be, in fact, any comps, but there's many comps in terms of an NOI concept, because an NOI concept is kind of the smoothing out, if you will, of the difference between apartment complexes. It's a common delineator of value across multiple apartment complex types. Just like EBITDA is a delineator between different businesses and different industries. And an EBITDA speaks reams to people, financial types like ourselves, as to what a business's value or worth is. And again, it's going to be dependent on the EBITDA stream, the go forward, at a cap rate. And the cap rate that the investor is going to demand, or the bank's going to demand in the investor's case, to buy that property or that business versus the cap rate on a bank or a lender is going to be what they're going to charge for interest on the loan. So that's what dictates the value. And the bank's going to give you some percentage of value. In current case, we're seeing, you know, 70%, I think, is probably a common level that most loans, a 70% LTV is not uncommon these days. It dropped down to mid-50s to mid-60s for quite a while. Now, so we refinance, pull our money out as owners, take some of our original investment back in most cases on these transactions. We're not back to the point where we get all of our money back on the first refi. That's happened over the last 20 years many times. But 60 to 80% is normal, and then you still own the property, and you let the property continue to operate. You're raising some rates along the ways, the rental growth, your occupancy hopefully trends up. So you begin to create a new picture of the NOI trending to where you can refinance or sell in another 3 to 5 years and make more money. As opposed to, let's contrast that with single family. Let's say you go out as a new investor and you buy that first single family rental, after you go to one of your investor meetings or meetups and you get excited about a property you hear about, and you work through your calculations and realize, okay, I can net whatever you're looking to net, several hundred dollars a month or a couple hundred a month, the case may be, and you buy it. And then you run that rental property just impeccably. It's an awesome property. You get good tenants. You're getting a rent that's at the top of the market. And at some point over the next 10, 15 years, maybe less, you decide you want to sell it. And so you remember in the case of our apartment building, the value was based on that NOI. It wasn't based on a comp from an apartment complex around the corner. It was the amount of revenue that was being, or net revenue, net income stream, that net operating income that was being generated by the property after applying a cap rate. Well, in the single family property, I don't care how well you've run that property, you've got an invisible, well, it's invisible until you learn about it from your realtor, you've got a maximum ceiling that's placed over that property that you will not likely exceed when it comes to selling it. What is that? Well, that would be called a comp. And it's the amount of money, typically it's expressed in a square footage or by square foot, that your neighbors sold their properties several months ago or even last year. That's the dollar mark that you're likely going to be constrained by, so much per square foot. And unless there's something really compelling about your property versus others, that's going to be your limit. And unless, again, you've got something special or you've got people that are wanting to live in your area, that's going to be your mark. And so totally different than the way single family are valued. And, you know, you could run into a buzzsaw of a period in our history where sales prices went down. And if that's the case, your value is going to go down. Now, that's not to say we avoid that 100% with apartments, but it's more an economic phase, you know, a period in the economy where, you know, overall employment and other factors are weak, that we'll see an NOI and EBITDA, I mean, an NOI and cap rate scenario where the value of the property goes down. Deflation could cause that, although I can't remember when the last time was we experienced that. But typically, the apartment buildings, unless they drop in occupancy, which that does happen in periods of weak employment bad economies, recessions, I guess you would say, that does happen. And but typically, again, if you had your choice, you'd rather have the multifamily model of earning money than you would single family. Okay, well, now that we understand the difference, it may give you a new appreciation for some of the investor groups that are out there. I always encourage people to mingle with like-minded folks and understand more about this niche, join or don't join, but take advantage of the free education you can get just by going to case study nights and things of that nature that I know exist in most of the cities that we broadcast in, and, you know, get an idea of how you could catch up on your retirement. But understand, you probably want to consider getting someone on your team that focuses on these types of transactions on a daily basis and understands the norms and can steer you towards transactions that are putting forth pro forma data that's actually achievable by that property in that area. And we'd spend a lot of money to stay on top of rental rates, absorption rates, number of new units coming into the pipeline, the number of new units just got permitted, the number of units that are being delivered in the next few months. All of that is something that we try to stay on top of with current data. If we can be of service, please, again, go to our website, fill out the client profile form, and then schedule a call, link right next to the forms. Okay, we're at the end of the show. We'll be back on Sunday, same station, KSEV AM 700 at 7 a.m. And we appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. And join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.